Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
It's the Brian Lehrer Show on WNYC. Good morning, everyone, and don't look now, people. But while you may be debating Bernie Sanders' Medicare for All proposal with your friends, the Republican effort to repeal and replace Obamacare with something much more conservative is back. In fact, I've seen it called the zombie health reform bill because most people thought repeal and replace was dead, right? But now it's come back from the dead, like a zombie does. And it could wipe out almost everything you might like about Obamacare by September 30th. The individual mandate to have insurance, the guarantee of insurance for people with pre-existing conditions or who get pregnant, the subsidies if you can't afford the sticker price, all gone with a September 30th deadline for passage because of the Senate rules. So no matter which side of this bill you're on, there is a fierce urgency of now for killing or saving Obamacare again. And once again, if you remember what happened in the summer or earlier in the summer, it seems like it could all come down to three Republican senators who are officially undecided as of now: Susan Collins of Maine, Lisa Murkowski of Alaska, and John McCain of Arizona. Do you remember that impassioned speech that McCain gave on the Senate floor after he came back from brain surgery and decided to vote no? Based on what he said then, you would think he'd vote no again, because the same objections he had then still apply. But McCain is not revealing himself as of yet. For a little context, here is John McCain from that memorable speech on some of why he decided to vote no in that case. This is just 30 seconds.
Let's trust each other. Let's return to regular order. We've been spinning our wheels on too many important issues because we keep trying to find a way to win without help from across the aisle. That's an approach that's been employed by both sides, mandating legislation from the top down without any support from the other side, with all the parliamentary maneuvers that requires. We're getting nothing done, my friends. We're getting nothing done.
Senator McCain, before his no vote on McConnell Care this summer, the new version, even though it's been proposed by McCain's good friend, Lindsey Graham, has those same flaws as McCain saw them before. What he called regular order, no committee hearings, no bipartisan input, maybe even this time no Congressional Budget Office score for how much it'll cost or save and how many people will lose their coverage. There may not be time for that before September 30th. So the nation awaits McCain's mind, also Collins and Murkowski's, and we'll get to that as well, as we welcome Mary Agnes Carey, senior correspondent for Kaiser Health News, former health reporter for Congressional Quarterly. Hi, Mary Agnes. Welcome back to WNYC.
Thanks for having me.
And let's do some politics and some substance. And substance first, I see that this Lindsey Graham, Bill Cassidy version of repeal and replace is actually more radical than what they debated before in how much it takes the federal government out of healthcare funding altogether and dumps it on the states. So how central is that to understanding what's new here?
It's incredibly important because it scraps so much of the structure of the Affordable Care Act. As you noted, it gets rid of the Medicaid expansion, gets rid of these subsidy payments to help people who qualify pay for their health insurance, also would scrap the payments, the subsidies, the cost-sharing subsidies, rather, that help people with out-of-pocket costs. All these things together would be put into big block grants distributed to states, but in a formula that is very different from the current Medicare program. The key takeaway here is if you are in a state like a New York or a California that expanded the Medicaid program under the Affordable Care Act, if you have generous benefits, you spend a lot of money, you worked hard to get people into the Affordable Care Act, you are going to get less money out of this. There'll be a redistribution. And in effect, a state like maybe a Texas that didn't expand the Medicaid program, that hasn't done outreach to get people into the ACA, would actually get an increase in their funding, where a state like New York or California gets a decrease. So it sets up a major food fight, if you will, among the lawmakers in the states about redistributing that pot of money in Medicaid, and that is going to get ugly.
And the Washington Post says Graham and Cassidy have been talking up those unequal state outcomes to conservatives. Would it be too harsh to say? Because Lindsey Graham has a reputation as a conservative guy, but a sort of straight shooter. Is it too harsh to say this is as much a partisan redistribution of wealth for partisan purposes as a reform of the healthcare system for ideological ones?
Well, it certainly would take money again to red states, give more money rather to red states that didn't expand the Affordable Care Act. That's absolutely true. And the argument they're using is really kind of an interesting way to push this bill. They're saying, you know, do you believe the federal government should have control? That as under, we talked about under the Affordable Care Act, essential health benefits, can't charge sicker people more money, can't charge older people more than three times what you charge a younger person. Should the federal government be making those rules or should the state be making those rules? And that is something that conservative lawmakers love to hear. States' rights, give state control, let them decide what's best for their population. So it fits right in with the party ideology.
But there's a Washington Post headline this morning that says new health care plan stumbles under opposition from governors.
Right.
Is that accurate or is it popular with red state governors, which is about two-thirds of all the governors, and only unpopular with blue state governors and maybe one or two Republicans?
Well, right now it's about a 15-yes split. 15 governors, including from Wisconsin and Arizona, came out yesterday in favor of it. And Arizona's key because you just mentioned John McCain. How will that governor's backing of this influence him, if at all? But you've got governors from 10 states, including Alaska, again, important for Lisa Murkowski, an undecided person, and Ohio that have come out and said they are against this thing. So again, I think if you went through these various letters, and some letters lawmakers have signed on and some they haven't, but they've sort of been in those camps. I think if it's a state that expanded Medicaid, that embraced that expansion, they're going to want to keep that money. And if you didn't embrace it, if you didn't want to do it, you're going to get more money in this bill.
Listeners, your questions or comments about the new Lindsey Graham, Bill Cassidy. Bill Cassidy is a Republican senator from Louisiana, by the way, in case you don't know that name. Not the most nationally famous member of Congress, but pretty prominent, certainly prominent in this and prominent in various ways for people, you know, who are into national politics at that granular level. Bill Cassidy, Lindsey Graham, their name on this bill primarily. And if you have any comments or questions about this zombie bill bringing Obamacare repeal and replace back from the dead with a September 30th deadline for passage, 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692 for Mary Agnes Carey, senior correspondent for Kaiser Health News. And you can talk about either the substance of the bill or the politics of the bill at 212-433-9692 or tweet at Brian Lehrer. We'll be watching our tweets. Back to the substance, Mary Agnes. Another provision I see is that this version of repeal and replace is so conservative it doesn't even include tax credits for Americans who buy health insurance as individuals. The previous Republican versions did away with the Obamacare sliding scale subsidies, but partially replaced them with tax credits. This version would end any kind of tax credits related to buying health insurance, according to what I read. Can I possibly have that right?
Yeah, no, that's correct. Now, states could take their big block grant that they would receive, and they could decide, in our state, we will award this amount of money to help people buy health insurance, and we'll do it in this way. So a state could make that decision, but it would not be mandated by the federal government. And that's really interesting, the fact that the subsidies are gone, not only to buy insurance, but to help you with all of those out-of-pocket costs we pay, our copays, deductibles, that kind of thing. Health insurance exchanges, as envisioned by the federal government, gone. Right now, you have about 13 states that run their own exchanges. The rest of the country is under the federal exchange and the Affordable Care Act. That marketplace would be gone. So this would require states, if they wanted to establish a marketplace, establish a subsidy program, they would have to get all this stuff up and running by 2020. And as we know, a lot of state legislatures meet only part of the year, not for the entire time. So that is another whole bureaucratic lift, which will also require money that states would have to do, would be heavily politicized, and it would in effect, create different insurance markets depending on where you lived. The ACA was trying to equal that out. They were trying to get rid of those variances in the individual market, which is about 20 million people, 17 to 20 million people. People who buy insurance on their own. Most of us get our health insurance at work. That's about 150 million people. Or they're on the Medicaid program, poor and disabled, or the Medicare program, which is for the elderly and disabled. So it would really shift a lot of this. The Graham-Cassidy bill shifts a ton of things to the states to decide.
Another substantive change, the Mitch McConnell version in the summer required at least one plan to be available in each state with the Obamacare Essential Benefits Package, which includes maternity and mental health and addiction treatment and other things. This version does not require any essential benefits combo to be sold. It also abolishes the healthcare exchanges on which people now buy Obamacare policies. People may not have realized the McConnell version would have kept them. I'm getting all these comparisons, by the way, from a good chart on PBS.org, folks, if you want to.
Oh, yeah, it's great. Lisa Desjardins did that. Right. Yeah, excellent.
And I'll throw in that, like the previous repeal and replace bills, this one blocks federal dollars for Planned Parenthood. That means they're non-abortion services, because abortion services are already not funded by federal dollars, for a year. That part is still in. And this one does not include a financial penalty for people who let their health insurance lapse. The previous version tried to keep healthy people in the system a little bit by making health insurance more expensive if you give it up while you're healthy, and try to get back in as soon as you get sick because you weren't doing your fair share before. That's sort of a lighter version of the individual mandate, but this doesn't even include that. Was the penalty, what else am I missing, Mary Agnes, that's big change-wise in this new version on the substance? Anything else you'd throw on that pile?
No, I think that you hit on the key points. I mean, the idea of requiring people to buy health insurance before they get sick, making it more universal as many states do on auto insurance, for example. That's been one of those key bones of contention for the Affordable Care Act. Now, a state could decide that it wants to take certain steps to encourage you to enroll in health insurance. For example, they could say if you have a lapse of maybe this federal standard is 63 days or more, you have a lapse in coverage, then when you come back in, you have a waiting period, or you pay a certain percentage more for your money. Another thing that is a difference here between this bill and what was the Senate rejected in the summertime, in July, is it keeps a lot of taxes and fees that are in the Affordable Care Act. I think the only tax that's lifted is the medical device tax and the penalties for the individual and the employer mandates. The earlier version, again, which the Senate rejected in the summer, scrapped all those taxes, and the fact that they're still in there, and they're in there because that's how Graham and Cassidy have to fund the bill, that's what's got Rand Paul, a conservative from Kentucky, saying, I'm not voting for this thing. It doesn't get rid of those taxes and fees. I don't like that. And he doesn't seem to be a vote, he being Rand Paul, that they can flip. So he seems to be a hard no on this because they've kept the taxes and fees. And it's you know, insurance industry, taxes on the insurance industry, taxes on the pharmaceutical industry, the high-income earners. If you make $200 as an individual or $250 or higher as a couple, there's certain higher taxes you paid. All those would still be in this bill.
Well, with all the conservative changes that we just laid out to the substance of health reform or of our healthcare system, I should say, why didn't they go all the way and repeal these taxes that Rand Paul and others find so objectionable that were part of Obamacare?
Because at some point, you have to fund what you're doing. Now, you mentioned the Congressional Budget Office earlier. We call it CBO for short. They're the official scorekeeper. They would at some point, they're going to have a preliminary estimate next week, but they won't have the full complete estimate. But if they did that full estimate, they would explain how what's new spending and what's new revenue and what's the ultimate contribution to the deficit. And last time in the last bill, they really went after Medicaid to raid Medicaid and change Medicaid to help fund this because they got rid of the taxes. But I think they're keeping them in this bill, including Medicare payment changes that have been part of the Affordable Care Act, because they have to pay for the things they want to do. You've got to finance those block grants. that redistribution of money to the states. And so if the CBO at some point does a full calculation, we'll see what the impact of that is and what is the impact on the deficit.
We're talking about this new surprise Republican effort to revive a repeal and replace bill with this new version that we've been talking about the specifics of with Mary Agnes Carey, senior health reporter for Kaiser Health News in Washington, and Jim in the Bronx. You're on WNYC. Hi, Jim.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. My question is this. How is this going to play politically with congressional Republicans in the states that are going to lose a lot of money? I think New Jersey, New York, California. I mean, in all the so-called blue states, you do have, you know, substantial numbers of Republicans elected to Congress. How are they going to go along with this? And what are going to be the likely consequences? And I'll take an answer off air.
Thank you very much, Jim. And that's a great question. And New Jersey is a great example because New Jersey has a very divided congressional delegation. There's a good handful of Democrats. There's a good handful of Republicans. Is New Jersey one of those states that's been generous on Medicaid, like New York, that would therefore stand to lose if this bill goes through?
I'm pretty sure that New Jersey embraced the Medicaid expansion.
Yes.
They would have an issue with it. Okay.
Yes.
And so
Governor Christie
this is
did that.
Yeah, so Jim raises an excellent point. You've got some Republicans in these states that have expanded Medicaid that are getting heartburn over this because they're going to get pressure from their governors. They are thinking about what does this mean for my local constituents? How's this going to play out in the midterms? They're also worried on the flip side, if they don't go for it, that they'll get primaried, right, from a more conservative opponent who will say, you had 7 years to repeal the Affordable Care Act and you didn't do it. But these are the very real world consequences that are happening. And to your earlier point about the accelerated schedule, there's going to be two hearings next week on this in the Senate. One in the Senate Finance Committee, which is one that traditionally handles health care matters. It has jurisdiction over this. The other is the Senate Governmental Affairs Committee, which is headed by one of the co-sponsors, Ron Johnson of Wisconsin. There will be some public examination there. But if this gets to the Senate, and that is a big if, get to the Senate floor rather, because it's unclear if there will be the votes. It's unclear if the Majority Leader McConnell will take it to the floor. There's going to be very little time. There'll be really no debate time because of the Senate rules you referenced earlier. The debate time is gone. That was used up in July. They would go straight to a rapid-fire amendment process we call Votorama because it goes so fast. People come to the floor. They introduce an amendment. It's either up or down, a quick vote. Point being that there won't be a lot of time to talk about what this means for the state of New Jersey or the state of New York or the state of California. Members may try to get to that through the amendment process, but you won't have days of discussion, long nights on the Senate floor for debate. That's not going to happen.
And a little more on New Jersey, since that's part of us around our listening area. Another wild card here might be if the judge in Robert Menendez's corruption trial even lets him out to vote. The judge has said Robert Menendez may not be allowed to skip that trial on given days where there are important votes in the Senate. And if they are within one vote here, the Robert Menendez vote is going to be crucial. So we'll see what happens with that. Also, there are at least, the Senate delegation from New Jersey, that's Cory Booker and Menendez, both Democrats. It's the House delegation that split. And I wonder if you know if the House vote on this could be close, because if the Senate passes it, it then has to go to the House by September 30th. And we do have Republicans in some swing districts, notably Rodney Frelinghuysen in the 11th Congressional District in New Jersey, who's the head of the powerful Appropriations Committee, but is under a lot of pressure from Democrats unhappy with health reform. I think they actually voted no on the last version. But there are other Republicans from New Jersey, too, who may have voted no last time, but they're going to be under a lot of pressure to vote yes this time, just like McCain and Murkowski are under a lot of pressure. I'm just laying out some of the dynamics for New Jersey. I guess that's one of the things that listeners can do, right? Like there's this protest group called NJ11 for Reform or something that's a liberal protest group within Frelinghuysen's district that was very active during the town hall meeting periods on the potential of Obamacare repeal and replace earlier in the year. With this coming up so suddenly, Mary Agnes, I guess groups like that and around the country in swing districts, they don't have a lot of notice to ramp up and put a lot of pressure.
No, I think that what's happening is obviously, look at all the things that are happening in the news. We've got action at the UN. We've got, you know, North Korea firing missiles. We've got earthquakes in Mexico. We may have another hurricane on the way. There's been so much to draw our attention to many things, but now I think people are starting to tune in who care about the Affordable Care Act, who are in the kind of groups you're talking about. They're really tuning in and focusing. The American Medical Association has now come out against this bill. The American Hospital Association, AARP, tons of patient groups. It's the same pressure we saw in July build and build and get bigger and bigger. But to your point about the House, this is really a very important point to make because Paul Ryan, who's the Speaker of the House, has been quoted by other members, and it's sort of out there that he's kind of sending the notice now. Look, if you, the Senate, pass this thing, we'll pass it in the House. But as you note, it's going to be a close vote. It was a close vote last time. If the House passes it, it goes to the president. There's no House and Senate conference. There's no other way to try to shape this bill before it would become law. If, in fact, again, it goes to the Senate floor. And another thing to think about, this could, the bill as we know it now could change a lot between now and September 30th because Senators Graham and Cassidy and their co-sponsors are out there trying to get a Lisa Murkowski, a John McCain, possibly even a Rand Paul to come to find something in this measure attractive for them. And it's not unusual. They could change funding formulas. They could come up with special sort of rifle shots, if you will, one-liners that help a particular state or even if it were for a House issue, a particular district. So this is a fast-moving target that people really have to watch. Does the legislation change? Does Mitch McConnell get enough votes? Does it come to the Senate floor? Do any amendments on the Senate floor pass to change this bill? How fast would it get to the House? As you noted, they've got to move by September the 30th. Otherwise, this special vote protection in the Senate that allows Republicans to do this with 51 votes after September 30th, that thing goes away. Right. So there's really a lot going on here.
Paul in Montclair, you're on WNYC. Hi.
How you doing? Long-time listener, first-time caller. I just wanted to find out that in previous plans, they had a provision where large employers were able to then move over to the federal plan. I wonder if there's anything like that happening. I'll take my answer offline. Thank you.
Thank you. There may not be any federal plan after this. But Mary Agnes, if I'm not mistaken, you wrote an article on Kaiser Health News detailing ways that repealing and replacing Obamacare, which presumably is just for the people buying insurance as individuals, would also affect people who get their insurance at work. Am I right?
Right. When we were looking at the idea of an elimination of an essential health benefit, right, and how if that happened, how could that play out for people in the workplace? There could be some crossovers between some changes made, and again, this is looking at an earlier version of the bill, and for people in the workplace, and what sort of leads, if you will, employers might take from changes that others made in the Affordable Care Act. How could that reshape, perhaps making your employer-based plan less generous? But to Paul's question, basically the thing to keep in mind here is if this particular measure passed, states would be making those decisions about whether a large employer could buy on the exchange or whether an individual would get a subsidy to purchase insurance or whether there would be any requirement for insurance plans to cover these things that the Affordable Care Act has added to all plans, requiring maternity care or mental health care or substance abuse care. This would be, again, shaped in the individual states at the legislatures with the regulators. So it would be something where, as a consumer, if you were interested in this and wanted to watch it, you'd have to not only watch what has happened at the federal level if it passed, but what would be happening in your state? When would your state lawmakers be having hearings and committee hearings and public hearings and possibly voting on this? And how would insurers react or employers react in your individual state? It really, you know, would move it out of Washington into the states around the country.
The couple of Senate hearings scheduled for next week on this that you mentioned, is that enough for John McCain to say, well, okay, there was regular order, there were hearings, so people from both sides of the aisle were able to have input, pro or con, and pull out some details from experts? Is that enough to give him cover to say this is different than the version he voted against earlier in the summer because there was no what he called regular order?
Well, that's a great question. And I think if a lawmaker wants to vote for something, he or she can find cover in any particular way they define it. But here's the other thing we haven't talked about this morning that might be influencing Senator McCain and other senators. There had been an ongoing bipartisan discussion between Lamar Alexander and Patty Murray. Lamar Alexander is the senator, Republican senator, who heads another committee called the Health, Education, Labor, and Pensions, the HELP Committee. Patty Murray is the ranking Democrat. Since Labor Day, they had four hearings on a bipartisan basis looking at ways to possibly shore up the current ACA exchanges, looking at these cost-sharing subsidies. Is there a way for – would there be a way for Congress to make them more stable, to fund them on a regular basis because the Trump administration is now doing it month to month, which is upsetting the insurers? That's why these rates for 2018 are sometimes 20% higher, the insurers say, because the cost-sharing subsidies aren't funded. This committee process was also trying to look at how do we help insurers with the highest cost cases. Again, insurers point to those really sick people who came in early to the Affordable Care Act. They cost a lot of money. They came in with chronic expensive conditions in some cases. Could there be a bipartisan solution there? Last night, Senator Alexander said that they had come to an impasse. They couldn't get a deal. They were working very hard. They were trying to get legislation by the end of the month. But Patty Murray and many others basically have pointed to Republican leadership in the Senate has shut that thing down. They've shut down those negotiations because they don't want to give senators a chance to say, well, I don't want to vote for the Graham Cassidy bill and repeal all this stuff. I want to vote for that Lamar Alexander, mm-hmm. Patty Murray bipartisan bill. McConnell, the majority leader, doesn't want to give him a choice. So the fact that the bipartisan route that was ongoing, that sounds like that's what Senator McCain was envisioning in his floor speech that you played. That's been shut down. That also gives Senator McCain room to say, you know, I appreciate the Finance Committee had one hearing, and I appreciate that the Governmental Affairs hearing, had a Governmental Affairs Committee had a hearing, but it's not enough for me. Because it's really not. I mean, if you look back to how when the ACA was discussed, we're talking months, hearings, discussion, mm-hmm. witnesses, right. White papers, amendments, right. You name it.
Back in 2010.
Yeah, this is not the same thing they're talking about. You're talking about two hearings, and then you've got all the backdoor dealing we just talked about that's ongoing from the sponsors of the bill trying to get people to get this. So I don't know where Senator McCain will go, but the fact that he voted against it before, members tend not to flip. I mean, once they cast a vote, that tends to be where they are, but things can change.
So this little squeak of bipartisanship after McCain's impassioned plea in that speech, after President Trump started doing a little business with Chuck and Nancy, as he calls them, and there was a little bit of backlash from all the hyper-partisanship and the Lamar Alexander, Patty Murray effort was getting some good press when it got any press at all. That's wiped away for the moment because the Republican leadership was strong enough to say, let's not even offer that as an option right now.
Right. If this is our last shot for repeal, this is our Hail Mary play, we're going to go for this. We're going to see what happens. Doesn't mean it'll get to the floor. If it gets to the Senate floor, may not have the votes, but they really want to focus on repeal because that's what they've told their base they're going to do for 7 years.
By the same token, politically, did Bernie Sanders and his other allies in the Senate, who introduced the Medicare for All bill the other day, make a tactical error, in your opinion? Because I see Lindsey Graham has been using the Medicare for All proposal as an argument for his bill, saying this is our last best chance to stave off socialism. Should Bernie Sanders and Senator Gillibrand and the others who are behind that bill have waited until just after September 30th to put it on the floor or to put it into the, you know, introduce it formally because then they wouldn't be a target? Or do you think this just that question doesn't move any votes, so it's irrelevant?
Yeah, I mean, I think Democrats are split, right? There's the camp that says where Nancy Pelosi is, right? We've got to protect the ACA. If memory serves me correctly, Senators Graham and Cassidy had their news conference almost at the same time that Senator Sanders and his supporters had their news conference last week. All the coverage was of Sanders. It got all the attention. But if you think we need to protect the ACA and not go to single payer, then you're not too happy with what Senator Sanders did. But they, as he showed, he had something like a third of the Democratic caucus up there, the Senate, yep. All the big names, the future leaders. I think they felt, and maybe they still do,
Elizabeth
that the ACA is
Cory
right.
Booker.
And, sure, Kamala and, Harris, right?
Right. That, Al Franken.
You know, that they're solid, that the ACA is solid. It's a fabric of the land. We need to push harder. We need to go farther. And this is the next place that we've got to get people there. So
last thing, and we're just about out of time, but Susan Collins, is she still a definite no, like she has been pretty solidly through the repeal and replace versions? And what about Lisa Murkowski from Alaska?
Right. Both of them are kind of holding their cards close to their vest. Neither have said they are going to vote against this bill. If I had to pick, I'd say Susan Collins is a hard no. I think Murkowski, especially with this Planned Parenthood thing in there, she's not thrilled with that, may turn out to be a hard no. But they're both taking it under advisement, and it's just one of those things we got to watch.
Oh, boy. All right. So
there you go.
The zombie repeal and replace bill, you thought repeal and replace was dead like a good zombie. It is back with the September 30th deadline, and now you know more. So listeners, whether you're for or against Obamacare, for or against this Graham Cassidy repeal and replace, with all the details that we've laid out about how it goes even further than the previous repeal and replace versions, get active no matter what side you're on, because the moment is now. And we thank Mary Agnes Carey, senior correspondent for Kaiser Health News, for filling us in so fully. Thank you so much.
Thank you.